Right, this is Pure Decking for Thursday, June 13th. 1983 in for the joke. I don't remember if that's the right one or not. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and so far, in my experience, project managers only exist to make things harder for everyone else. Tonight we have an Are You? What's up, Are You?
Well, not much, man. Been a bit of a slow week, but not complaining.
Yeah, you know, I've got some interesting stories here, and almost none of them have anything to do with what we were talking about before the show. So we're going to do a complete 180.
That's a good thing, because they're not a political show or a current events.
No, well.
And neither of us are experts on the topic we were previously talking about.
Mel, I'm gonna say this once. You can fuck right off with that. If you haven't been on some of the calls I've been on, listening to people arguing about metrics and goal statements, which boils down to, are we fixing the problem? Are we going to track fixing the problem? Or are we going to try giving, you know, the engineer who pushed the buttons we told him to push, giving him a gold star?
Oh, man, you know the room I want to be in this week. I wanted to be in the room at YouTube talking about ad blockers.
Well, that's number two. That's so. Mel said his wife hasn't changed her name to Off yet. So that's pretty good. All right. So the first one is from Yahoo Finance. Wells Fargo fires over a dozen for, quote, simulation of keyboard activity, unquote. they're firing people for using the mouse jigglers. Wells Fargo and company fired more than a dozen employees last month after investigating claims that they were faking work. The staffers in the firm's wealth and investment management unit were, quote, discharged after a review of allegations involving the simulation of keyboard activity, creating the impression of active work, unquote. So, I'm curious what the simulation of keyboard activity is. I mean, are we talking about a mouse jiggler? Or are we talking about them sitting there running the Hollywood script on their screens and just, you know, banging on the keyboard? It's one of the best gifs is where that guy's on the local news and he's actually running that program that, you know, auto types code, and he's just all over the keyboard like an idiot. Quote, Wells Fargo holds employees to the highest standards and does not tolerate unethical behavior, unquote. Have you guys seen your own accounting?
God damn it.
A company spokesperson said in a statement, devices and software to imitate employee activity, sometimes known as mouse movers or mouse jigglers, took off during the pandemic spurred work from home era, with people swapping tips for using them on social media sites Reddit and TikTok. Such gadgets are available on Amazon for less than $20. Well, at least get creative with it. Order like a Pi Pico and make your own. It's not hard. It's unclear from the FINRA disclosures whether the employees Wells Fargo fired were allegedly faking active work from home. The finance industry was among the most aggressive in ordering workers back to the office as the pandemic waned, though Wells Fargo waited longer than rivals JP Morgan Chase & Co. and Goldman Sachs. San Francisco-based Wells Fargo started requiring employees to return to the office under a, quote, hybrid flexible model, unquote, in early 2022. The bank now expects most staffers to be in the office at least 3 days a week, while members of management committee are in 4 days, and many employees, such as branch workers, are in 5 days. The nation's fourth largest lender has sought to grow in wealth management under the chief executive officer, Charlie Scharf, and his deputy, Barry Summers, who joined the firm in 2020. The unit was hit particularly hard with a series of scandals that erupted in 2016, sending advisors fleeing by the thousands, taking lucrative clients with them. Again, I say, have you seen your books when you say you hold your employees to the highest standards? recent firings have echoes of an episode at Wells Fargo from 2018 when the firm investigated employees in its investment bank for alleged violations of its expense policy after they tried to get the company to pay for ineligible evening meals with assistance from... Okay, yeah, so that's the author. Mouse jigglers. They were firing them for using mouse jigglers. Now, it's interesting because... Rather than claiming it's because of the mouse jiggler, right? Why didn't you just say their output was unsatisfactory? They're not producing enough output, because if it's not a corporate device, I have concerns with somebody plugging a random Chinese, you know, keyboard emulator into a company device, because you don't know if it's actually gonna start running scripts and shit when it thinks you're not looking. Because again, Pi Pico, USB rubber ducky, they're easy. But yeah, I guess it's if it is a legit device and all it's doing is jiggling the mouse, yeah, I guess it'll prevent the screensaver from coming up. Maybe, you know, I guess make it look like you're active in, like, you know, your group chat or whatever, but I would think it would just be that they're not producing enough output to keep their job, not the mouse jiggler. Cartel financiers want to, yeah, it smells about right there. I don't know. What do you think, are you?
I think it's just an excuse for them to do mass layoffs.
Well, there's a lot of companies wanting to do that right now.
And they're hoping that... at least one third of those people were using mouse jigglers, so they won't say anything. But yeah, you're right. Why not just sack them for lack of productivity? But then again, if you say that and you're downsizing staff for lack of productivity, what does it say about your business? That it's starting to fail. This is a way of them saving face, I think.
I could see that. I could absolutely see that. I mean, I don't...
That's where I'd stand on it.
I mean, I just think it's such a weird one, because if somebody's doing that, if they're faking work, you know what I mean? It says a couple of things. One, it says Wells Fargo is really watching what their people do like a hawk. At least they're recording enough stuff to be able to go back and investigate it. Because two, they didn't notice, and you know, because in the article it says somebody reported them for faking work. And makes me wonder if makes me wonder if they didn't notice that these people weren't doing anything until somebody complained about it.
Possibly.
So again, what's that? I guess that's my first question, is what's it like to have enough spare time during the day to need a mouse jiggler? Because I'm on calls like all effing day. To the point that I have a hard time getting other day-to-day stuff done because I keep getting pulled into random bullshit. So... like, how do you just do that all day? I mean, I don't... So, anyways, that's what I got on that. Next one's up is from Android Police. YouTube's next move might make it virtually impossible to block ads. Mel says... delegate better. I've tried that. I've got some juniors who I don't trust to do job. So, anyways, where was I? Right, Android Police, the YouTube thing. YouTube has been waging war on ad blockers for years now, and with a reasonable degree of success. The company's efforts ran YouTube Advance into the ground in 2022. It has only escalated efforts since then to push free tier views towards premium subscription plans instead of ad blockers. However, community-led efforts to circumvent these measures have met the hot entertainment apps' actions with comparable vigor, finally forcing the tech giant to stoop low enough to consider server-side ad injection, and the results may be less than desirable all around. So, what that means is they're going to insert the videos, the ads, server-side. They're going to be just baked into the video. It'll be part of the timeline. And I'm willing to bet they're going to write their player code to where you won't be able to skip forward past them. They'll flag them in the player, and then they'll write their players such that trying to skip them, just it won't let you do it, that it has to play those ads. While YouTube Vance relied on hijacking the file stream for content uploaded to YouTube and giving users a familiar but ad-free UI for it, newer implementations like Revance instead mod the default YouTube app to enable the same premium features, including ad blocking. That's helped by an automated and crowdsourced sponsor segment skipping, using an additional component aptly named Sponsor Block. Sponsor Block relies on users spotting sponsor segments and videos and flagging them in a shared repository so all other users can skip the reported segments. However, Google's latest attempt to deter ad blockers might throw a wrench in the seemingly well-oiled operation. A post from the Sponsor Block team on X claims that the YouTube team is experimenting with server-side ad injection. Although reports of this experimental change are few, it should help YouTube developers understand the efficiency and repercussions of this model, or this method, if they were to be deployed at scale. Feedback across Firefox and YouTube subreddits highlighted that it could break timestamped video links and chapter markers. However, YouTube knows the length of the ads it would inject and can offset timestamps correctly. The move also adds a layer of unnecessary complexity in saving premium views from these ads. If they are added server-side, the YouTube client would have to auto-skip them for premium members, but that also means ad segment info would be relayed to the client, opening the window of opportunity for ad blockers to use the same information meant for premium subscribers to skip ads injected automatically. Additional complexity in ad delivery is a necessary evil for businesses like YouTube that are dependent on ads and sponsor revenue, but also hamstrings the user experience and could slow down the content delivery. On the other hand, some people still recommend using a VPN and IP address from a country where YouTube ads are prohibited, such as Myanmar, Albania, or Uzbekistan. Some people tip creators directly for the revenue lost during their ad user block. YouTube needs to reevaluate how far it would go in attempts to deter such freeloaders, eager to avoid giving the platform a dime. After all, passwords, authentication, like CAPTCHAs, and other countermeasures in general can be circumvented or brute forced with enough time and effort. So, now AI would make short work. I don't know. I think they're gonna screw with it. I mean, although, if I think back, Myth TV back in the day, and this was, 15 years ago? It had fairly robust commercial detection when you were recording live TV. That's a good idea, Mel. Yeah, download 2 or 3 copies of the video and look at what changes. Because, they probably won't be baking them into the uploaded videos. I don't know. What do you think, are you?
I think it's hilarious. I love the desperation. I get to just see like the team later throwing shit around the office. Like, God damn it. Block Argent's still killing us. I think that like a dog chasing a car. when they finally get there, they won't know what to do with it. Because half their fucking viewership will be down. People who are new to the platform and just starting out, ads aren't going to help them. It's actually going to hinder them. Especially if you're just barely engaged with the content to start with. And I think YouTube still think it's 2015. And they have the viewer base. I mean, there's so many others out there now. And most of these people on these channels post other places as well. They don't just put all their eggs into YouTube anymore. You know, they're over on BitChute, Odyssey. Hell, most of my viewing now, apart from a couple of videos of an evening, come from BitChute and Odyssey.
Odyssey is interesting because I remember looking at it a couple of years ago, and it's like potential's here, there's not that much on it, so I need to go back and check it out again because it's been a minute, and I know more and more people were moving to it.
I mean, Rumble's doing well.
Yeah,
I don't
Rumble
watch
is
as much over there.
Rumble's got a problem in that they are self-selecting a political audience.
Yeah, I don't know that much about Rumble. I just know the people that used to be on YouTube that aren't allowed to be there anymore are over on Odyssey and BitChute.
Okay. So, but yeah, Mel had a good idea. They would just download the video a couple of times and cut out the bits that change. So, it's a good idea.
Or just go look for another platform.
Yeah.
That doesn't inject shit into it. So, I think YouTube is going to shoot themselves in the foot with this, but I do understand they are the giant right now, but pissing off the smaller customer base isn't going to help.
Well, I mean, no, because there's already a pretty good barrier to entry for trying to get new channels up and going in YouTube, right? And it's not... It's not that you can't do it, because obviously people do, but there's a lot of established channels, and a lot of the established channels got way more established when they were able to make a lot more money just off the YouTube ads rather than having to do all the sponsorship, right? So a lot of them kind of got started and got their content going before all this really was a thing, and now that it is a thing, it's you know, that's just one more barrier for smaller channels to get in and go. And so if you're looking at it today, if you're trying to get a channel going,
what percentage of the customer base, well, of YouTube, do you believe are running ad blockers? Is it that big a problem for them?
Oh, it's,
or are they just having a hissy fit?
Well, I don't know, because, I mean, I bet it's easily 30%. Probably, I mean, my first thought would have been 50%, but
no,
it's probably no, not, because so many people are going to be on mobile devices these days. So,
and have you seen a 16-year-old boy in their laptop?
Yeah.
It's a goddamn nightmare. There's no ad blockers on there.
So, yeah, I mean, It probably used to be way worse as far as ad blocks go for YouTube, but because I imagine it's only, you know, people who kind of hardcore into it, know what they're doing, who've been around for a bit, that are
so it'd probably only just be those in our age range that are using ad.
I don't know. I've shown a lot of people ad block and seen them spreading it too. So it's one of those things that once people know about, like they tell people about it. So it's like, you could probably track ad block usage showing up in population groups. Like you could track diseases.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mel's talking about in the chat there that, because Google owns Chrome and Chrome's market share is basically where Internet Explorer was back in the day when the government said it's a monopoly. you know, that they could start doing things like, you block and sponsor block and no script. Yeah, those just don't work on our sites. You know, they're just not allowed. We just disable those because they own the browser for most people. So.
Yeah, I didn't think of that.
But I don't know. I've used this stuff for so long. I kind of don't really know what it's like using the internet raw anymore, even on mobile stuff, because I use DNS based blockers and stuff like that too on my networks. So I mean 20-30% was probably a fair guess of people running in some kind of ad block. If I had to put a number to it, I have nothing to back that up. I'm just pure spitball, right? But yeah, that's Google seeing or YouTube seeing that as money left on the table for one.
Yeah, I just did a bit of a YouTube Google search, and roughly 37% of the internet uses ad block.
Hey, I wasn't terribly far off.
With people between the ages of 25 and 34 are the biggest uptakers of that.
Yeah, I've been around long enough to know. You get burned enough times, you start running it. I mean, you pretty much had to be using Adblock, I guess it'd be about 10 years ago now, because so many drive-by downloads were going through the banner ads. I mean, we did stories on decking of websites that required you to turn off the Adblock to read them, and their banner ads served up malware. So, you know, it's just not that I expect malware to make it through the YouTube system there, especially since they're playing video and not just, you know, showing code on a web page. But at the same time, man, I don't know.
Yeah.
So.
And they're certainly putting a lot of energy into stopping it. I suppose if they are the first ones to be able to stop it, then that software they create is going to be worth some money to other people who want to stop it as well.
Well, considering that, you know, their parent company's entire business model is based about ads, it's hard to argue. But I was kind of thinking, too, I guess the way I would do it now is I wouldn't, if I was going to start a channel now, and I cared about trying to build an audience and revenue stream and things like that, as opposed to just doing it for a hobby. I mean, if you're doing it for a hobby, do what you want, right? But if you're actually trying to build an audience and, you know, eventually turn it into a business or something, I would post on YouTube, because YouTube still has a lot of the market share. But what you would post on YouTube is like a 5 minutes, you know, clip of your video. And it's like, you want the rest, go over to BitChute, go over to Odyssey. I'm just putting it here to get your attention. Go, you know, basically use it as an ad to get them onto the other channels where you can actually have some control. Which is hard. It's hard to get people to change websites, especially things like YouTube, and, you know, where they just click off onto the next thing, right? But if you're doing something interesting enough to warrant what you're doing,
if you're good enough, they'll follow you.
So Adblock doesn't work if the video is an ad. Bottom rung. Yeah. Thanks, Mel. So, anyways. I don't know. That's... If they start doing it server-side, I mean, it really will be. Because you'll have people who, like, well, they're fucking with my videos. I don't want to post them anymore, because what's next? Using language models to analyze your video and detect offensive statements and cutting that part of the video out? Because once they start doing that, they are opening the door to editing your videos for you. And one, you know, that's kind of one more step to them picking and choosing, like, down to what's in your video. No, there's some censorship on BitChute, but I think they're a lot more cavalier than some of the other websites.
That, and they seem to take a long time to find anything.
It's like there got to be a lot of people complaining for them to care. Yeah, you're right. They do just cut your audio if they've detected the music. So I don't know. I see him getting more and more draconian to where they'll just AI your punnet through some of those content generators to you know, change what your video was to a more acceptable message. And oh, you're supporting the wrong political candidate here. Let's just fix that for you. And you know,
I think the video Planet India is still found on Rumble. They're the last ones to host that.
Oh, that thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that, I think that's still up there. I don't know.
I got about halfway through it. That thing pissed me off so bad. I couldn't finish it when they got to the part about the cows.
Yeah. I made sure I was heavily drinking and partaking to get through it.
But
it was totally worth it.
I couldn't do it.
Yeah, fair enough. But, like, YouTube's the first one to cut you off if they don't like something, and you go shop it around to everybody else, and by the time you've been cut off from everyone else, I think Rumble's your last bastion.
Mel, you don't... He's consenting to having nightmares and wants to know the name of the video.
What?
The Indian video.
Indian one. It's Planet India, I think it's called.
You'll know you have it if it's got you'll an AI David Attenborough narrating it.
Yeah. Just be warned, it is 18 plus, and if you have any sort of cultural sensitivity, I wouldn't watch it. But that, far from that, have at it if you can find it.
It is an extreme takedown of Indian culture. It is not.
It's heavy gore. Yeah, it's got everything a growing boy should watch in a video for his first exploration on the internet.
That is not how I would advertise that video at all.
Well, hey, if you're early 2000 adopter of the internet and say you've been around for quite a while, the video is not going to shock you. If you remember Rotten.com or Motherless in its original conception, then it's not nothing in there is going to shock you.
Well, you and I talked about it. That's not, it wasn't the gore that was bothering me. It was the inability to fix things.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh my God, really?
Oh no, I wasn't saying you're a pussy for not watching the video. It's just frustrating because you're like, that technology's been around since the 1900s. Fix it, you fucking idiots.
Yeah. So anyways, let's go to the next article here. This one is from itpro.com. A disgruntled ex-employee deleted 180 virtual servers from his company's systems in a rage following his dismissal, dealing significant damage to the company. Your first mistake was not removing their credentials before telling them.
Exactly, and then walking him out the fucking door the minute you told him. So, I'm sorry, company, whoever that was, fuck you, that's on you.
It's... Look. You don't with sysadmins, sysops, your security operators. I fully expect if I ever turn in my notice to be walked out the door and have my credentials disabled on the spot. And this is not a statement of trust or, you know, oh, you know, they just get rid of you. No.
It's best practice.
The moment somebody with that kind of system level access is leaving or going to be let go, you get them out of those systems because you don't know who's going to have the psychotic break and do something bad. And you're lucky if what they do is what this guy did, which is just going in and deleting shit. Because the really bad actors are the ones who don't delete anything. They know how to get in there without making a lot of noise, and they copy all of your shit off. That way they take it with them to their next job and say, here, you know, competitor company, here's all of the shit from your competitor. That's way worse. So the company in question, IT firm NCS, suffered damages of 918,000 Singapore dollars, equivalent to roughly 678,000 US dollars. The employee, Kandula Nagaraju, has been sentenced to 2 years and 8 months in jail on one count of unauthorized acts. Huh?
Fucking Pajit, of course.
Two years and 8 months in jail on one count of unauthorized access to computer material, with another charge taken into consideration for sentencing, according to reporting from CNA. Nagaraju reportedly exploited his prior access to NCS's quality assurance system to carry out the breach. Following his dismissal in 2022, he used administrator login credentials to gain unauthorized access to the system from between January and March of 2023. Between the first 2 months, he reportedly worked on some computer scripts and tested them to see if they could be used on the system to delete these servers. In March, he accessed the quality assurance system 13 times, running a program script written such that it would delete each of the 180 servers one at a time. Boris Sipot, a senior security engineer at Synopsys Software Integrity Group, told IT Pro that this is an important reminder for businesses to focus on the proper implementation of authentication systems. Quote, usually, when thinking about cyber attacks and protection against them, we tend to focus on unknown attackers and closing the possibility of how they would breach us from the outside, meaning no access without proper authorization, unquote, Sipot said. While authentication authorization systems are vital, Sipot added, they can still be exploited due to improper implementation, and he maintained that it is not enough to just create accounts and assign them access rights. Quote, the accounts and their access resources must be constantly monitored, and in the case of irregularities, the responsible person or system needs to be alerted, unquote, Sipot said. With regard to this particular case, Sipot said that it raised many questions as to why his account was still active and why it was not being monitored. Account sets of his must be monitored and, crucially, must expire when a role is terminated. Now, they did say an administrator account, so I wonder if this guy's regular account was disabled, but he knew the admin account, right? So this raises another question. If he was let go in 2022, why aren't you rotating your admin accounts on a regular basis? Yeah, it's a pain in the ass, but it prevents shit like this. So, you know, those policies where you have your security people saying they change all your non-human accounts, you know, once every 6 months? This shit is why. Javad Malik, lead security awareness advocate for KnowBe4, added that this incident should serve as a stark reminder of the human element inherent to cybersecurity business. Quote, it's not just about the technology and its vulnerabilities, but also about how individuals react under certain emotional states. Kandala Naga Raju's drastic action following his dismissal underscores a critical oversight that many organizations still stumble upon the exit process, unquote, Malik said. And he's correct. So, and if he had that, you know, the frustrating thing here is it sounds like a cloud system. So if he had admin access to the cloud system, was running scripts to delete servers, might have been deleting the backups too.
Either way, it's on the company. They did it themselves.
Yeah, they didn't manage their access correctly. Just yep. Calling Raju.
Pajit.
I might have been substituting him when I was reading the story a couple of times just to not say the name. I did that in one of the earlier stories, too. Oh, it's fireworks. I'm not shooting at you. Gun's in the other room, I promise. well, that gun is. Anyways, next article is from Ars Technica. Adobe to update vague AI terms after users threaten to cancel subscriptions. So I'm going to read
that
this.
Was quick.
Oh no, it's not. It's not as good as you think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, they're playing games. Adobe has promised to update its terms of service to make it, quote, abundantly clear, unquote, that the company will never train generative AI on creators' content after days of consumer backlash, with some saying they would cancel Adobe subscriptions over its vague terms. Users got upset last week when an Adobe pop-up informed them of the updates to terms of use that seemed to give Adobe broad permission to access user content, take ownership of that content, or train AI on the content. The pop-up forced users to agree to the terms to access Adobe apps, disrupting access to creatives' projects unless they immediately accepted the term. And this is the biggest problem, right? So it was they added all this crap, and you couldn't just keep using the current version. You couldn't go back to an old version that didn't have this. It was accept it now or be locked out of your software and your projects. And for people who like do video editing, image manipulation for like a job, they basically had no choice but to agree to this because their software is locking them out. And now they have another problem. What if they're doing NDA work, stuff under contract saying you will not share this outside of, you know, yourself for doing the job? Now Adobe's forcing you to break your contractual agreement with your clients. I mean, we talked about it last week, but it's still bullshit. For any users unwilling to accept, canceling annual plans could trigger fees amounting to half, up to 50% of their remaining subscription cost. Adobe justifies collecting the fees because a yearly subscription comes with a significant discount, apparently. On X, YouTuber Sasha Yaren wrote that he canceled his Adobe license, quote, after many years as a customer, unquote, arguing that no creator in their right mind can accept Adobe's terms, and seemed to seize a worldwide royalty-free license to reproduce, display, distribute, or do whatever they want with any content produced using their software. Quote, this is beyond insane, unquote, Yinchen wrote on X. Quote, you pay a huge monthly subscription, and then they want to own your content and your entire business as well. Going to have to learn some new tools, unquote. Adobe's design leader, Scott Belsky, replied, telling Yinchen that Adobe had clarified the update in a blog post, noting that Adobe's terms for licensing content are typical for every cloud content company, but he acknowledged those terms were written about 11 years ago and that the language could be plainer, writing that, quote, modern terms of service and the current climate of customer concerns should evolve to address modern day concerns directly, unquote. Yinchen so far has not been encouraged by any of Adobe's attempts to clarify its terms, writing he gives, quote, precisely zero fucks about Adobe's clarifications or blog posts, unquote. Quote, you forced people to sign new terms, unquote, Yinchen told Belsky on X. Legally, they are the only thing that matters, and that is the big point right there. So that's why I wanted to read this, is because they had that quote in there, because he's not wrong. So if you go to sue Adobe because they've stolen your content and they're training AI with it, and you say, you said you wouldn't do this, your lawyers are going to point to those terms of service and say, well, you're giving us the right to do it right there. You agreed to it. And then when you say, but what about your blog post over here saying you would never do that? It's like, yeah, that's a contract. That's an ad. You know, that blog post is not legally binding. That clarification is not legally binding. If they end up in court, the only thing that is going to matter is those terms of service agreements. So he's not wrong. The only thing that matters is what those things actually say. Another user in the thread using an anonymous X account also pushed back, writing, quote, point to where it says in the terms that you won't use our content for LLM or AI training, and state unequivocally that you do not have the right to use our work beyond storing it. That would go a long way, unquote. And then Belsky wrote, stay tuned. Unfortunately, it takes a process to update a TOS, but we're working on incorporating the clarifications. Belsky co-authored a blog post this week announcing that Adobe's terms would be updated by June 18th after a week of fielding feedback from customers. Quote, we've never trained generative AI on customer content, taking ownership of customers' work, or allowed access to customers' content beyond legal requirements, unquote, Adobe's blog said. Quote, nor were we considering ever using any of these practices as part of the recent terms of use update. That said, we do agree that evolving our terms of use to reflect our commitments to our community is the right thing to do, unquote. So yeah, in other words, guys, we fucked up. We've pissed everybody off. They're at least acknowledging it. Adobe's blog breaks down what changes already planned for the next update to its terms. Perhaps most crucially in today's world of rapid AI developments, Adobe will add a statement, quote, to reassure people that as a legal obligation, we don't train generative AI on customer content. Adobe said updates would also, quote, make it clear in the license grant section that any license granted to Adobe to operate its service will not supersede your ownership rights. Well, that doesn't clarify it now, does it? If they have that same, you know, non-royalty worldwide license, Sure, it doesn't supersede your ownership rights, but they still have a right to it. They still have a license to it. Additionally, the terms will clarify that users can always, now this is the part, always opt out of participating in Adobe's product improvement program that leverages machine learning, not generative AI, to process usage data and content characteristics to improve your product experience and develop features like masking and background removal. It's an opt out. They're going to put language in the terms saying that you can opt out of having your stuff used to be processed by machine learning. Because again, not generative AI is a promise on a blog, not a terms of service. They're going to put it as an opt out. Quote, this opt out option will be emphasized, Adobe's blog said, and licenses required to operate our products on your behalf will be narrowly tailored and now include plain English examples of what they mean and why they're required. However, some creative professionals were just as concerned with terms allowing Adobe to scan cloud-hosted content. The update to Adobe's terms prompting backlash was intended to, quote, ensure we are not hosting any child sexual abuse material, Adobe's blog said. However, the terms could also seemingly allow Adobe to access content that some users were legally not allowed to share with anyone due to a non-disclosure agreement with clients. For designers working on games or movies or studios paranoid about leaks, the provision would seemingly be non-negotiable and force them to use other tools to finish projects. Also, a good point we didn't really talk about with the Adobe thing last week. If you're using cloud storage for things, have an offline copy, a backup of them, preferably in a non-encumbered format if you can. Because if the only place something you're working on exists is your Adobe Creative Cloud account while you're working on it in Photoshop, I mean, sure, it's convenient because it syncs to everything that you're using that account on, but what if Adobe locks you out because now they're changing the terms of service saying that you're only allowed to use the software if sitting on a bad dragon sex toy? I'm picking an absurd example, of course.
I know.
But what if they add something dumb like that and lock you out, and you're like, I'm not agreeing to this. And the only place that your file exists is locked up in their cloud that you can't access till you agree to violate yourself. So have an offline copy. If you want to use Cloud Sync tools, fine. Be aware of what they are, and you have to make way what's more important, keeping something private or making it accessible, right? I mean, that should be an option that you can weigh. But if you're going to use a cloud storage, have an offline copy. If it's important enough to do that, have a copy offline. Don't be reliant on a website to host it. Don't be reliant on that service being around forever. You know, everybody remembers Mega Upload, right? How many people lost all their stuff when Mega Upload got, canned?
Yep.
So
I lost a shit ton.
You know, have offline copies of your stuff. Hard drives are cheap. The planned area of clarification in Adobe's terms regarding this concern is perhaps the least reassuring to users, since Adobe's blog does not acknowledge the conflict with NDAs. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, until they update the language and we see what the new terms are. Again, they can put whatever they want in a blog post. If you actually end up in court with it, those terms are what matters. Anything on that, are you?
No, not much. I thought they would have reversed their stance, but they want to double down, let them go. See where you are this time next week.
Yeah, the whole opt-out thing is just wow. I mean, you're already.
But you've got to agree to opt out.
That takes some stones, man.
Oh, like YouTube, they think they're too big to fail. You know what I mean? They can just push their customers around and use them as cattle without getting any pushback. And unfortunately, like gamers, I think Photoshop people are just going to be bitches and eat it.
Well, there's a lot of industries that they're built on using those tools as standards. it's unfortunate, but it is true. So it may not be easy for them to move off of it. Not saying they can't. Not saying they can't put in the effort to pick out something new. There are alternatives out there. There's actually several for a lot of their tools, but
don't specialize.
Yeah.
Make sure you're across everything, you know? That's
well, I would say if your specialty is way. Video editing, you should know more than Adobe Premiere.
Yeah.
If your specialty is graphic design, you should know more than the Adobe tools. Because there's lots of them out there. I mean, okay, yeah, sure, there's Inkscape and there's GIMP. There's also Paint.net. There's also all the Affinity products for purchase stuff. Not to mention a whole bunch of like iPad stuff that's I don't know about the Android side because I haven't looked at their stuff lately, but I imagine there's a lot there too. But there's a lot of apps that aren't terrible on a lot of the tablets now. I'm not sure how they are with their license agreements. They might be worse because apps tend to be worse when it comes to this kind of stuff, so maybe not. But I'm just saying there's plenty of alternatives out there for this kind of stuff. So next up, this one's from TechSpot. It's kind of funny. Homemade cell phone tower allowed fraudsters to bomb UK in the UK to bombard people with scam texts. So nice. They weren't even sending him through the system. They just made their own fucking tower. I love it.
I can get behind that.
British authorities have arrested two suspects for allegedly running a homemade mobile antenna to send thousands of spam texts impersonating banks and other organizations. It's being called the first scheme of its kind uncovered in the UK. The cyber criminals are accused of piecing together an illegitimate cell tower or an SMS blaster device to bypass mobile carrier systems meant for filtering out sketchy text messages. One man, 32-year-old names Huayong Zhu of Croydon, has been charged with so far with possession of articles for fraud stemming from the alleged SMS spam setup. He's being held without bail ahead of a court appearance at the end of the month. Meanwhile, a second suspect arrested in Manchester back in early May was released on bond. The operation was led by the City of London Police Department. Their police's dedicated card and payment crime unit, which has been working the case alongside regulators like Ofcom and cybersecurity agencies. Quote, the criminals committing these types of crimes are only getting smarter, working in more complex ways to trick unknowing members of the public and steal whatever they can get their hands on, unquote, said Detective Chief Inspector David Vint, head of the Specialist Police Unit. Quote, it is vital we work with partners to help prevent the public from falling victim to fraud. While the police offered sparse details, it's being speculated the scam could involve a particular piece of mobile hijacking software or hardware called an IMSI catcher, commonly known as a Stingray. These controversial devices, normally used by law enforcement for investigations, can trick nearby phones into connecting to a spoofed cell tower set up by the bad guys instead of the real carrier network. From there, the crooks can bypass security controls to bombard connected devices with spam and malware. It's always advised to be vigilant against suspicious texts claiming to be from banks or companies asking for sensitive info. And Vint cautioned the same, quote, remember a bank or other official authority will not ask you to share personal information over text or phone, unquote. London police also highlighted that most major UK carriers let you forward sketchy text to 7726 free of charge, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, but I mean, they set up a flipping pirate cell phone station to send these texts instead of getting the filters. I mean, it's kind of awesome, actually. Yeah, pirate radio. Absolutely, Mel. It's just pirate cell phone tower. I mean, it's a way around the filters, I guess. The other thing is the equipment for running a cell phone has gotten a lot cheaper, but it's still not cheap, so they must have been making enough off these scams to cover the cost of the hardware. So, I don't know. Anything on that, are you?
I mean, the dude's got more degrees than you poke a fucking stick at. He's a Chinese nationalist.
Well, I figured with the name.
Yeah. Big, big digital footprint. No. Apart from scamming the public, that's the bit that pissed me off. Like, leave the public alone. Fucking hit the government.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure you could use something like a, they're talking in the IRC that they're not as expensive. I'm wondering if something like a hack RF and an amp and then an amplifier of appropriate frequency could probably do it. But police auctions these days, do you think people are buying a Stingray at a police auction?
Yeah, it's old tech.
Yeah. Has been using to take down millions of dollars worth of drones. I think we talked about a system doing that. Oh, that might have been not military drones. That might have been the DJI drones that people were cracking. What are you talking about? Amps aren't hard. Go on AliExpress. You can find all kinds of frequencies and amplifiers that you weren't, that you probably shouldn't be importing for various reasons that your lawyer will tell you about. It's just like, I think the Hack 1 is like limited to like less than a watt of transmit, so it'd be hard to get any range off the thing. But, anyways, let's see. We got started late, so we've actually got more time than I thought we did. Let's do this story from Beeping Computer. This is one RU sent me earlier in the week. New York Times. Their source code was stolen using exposed GitHub tokens. Internal source code and data belonged to the New York Times, was leaked on 4chan message board after being stolen from the company's GitHub repository in January of 2024. The Times confirmed to Beeping Computer. As first seen by VX Underground, the internal data was leaked on Thursday by an anonymous user who posted a torrent of 273 gigabytes archive containing the stolen data. Quote, basically all source code belongs to the New York Times company, 270 gig, unquote, reads the 4chan forum post. Quote, there are around 5,000 repos. Out of them, less than 30 are additionally encrypted, I think. 3.6 million files total, uncompressed tar. While Beeping Computer did not download the archive, so how can you speak intelligently to what's in it if you didn't download it? The threat actor shared a text file containing a complete list of the 6,223 folders stolen from the company's GitHub repo. The folder names indicate a wide variety of information was stolen, including IT documentation, infrastructure tools, source code, and allegedly including the viral Wordle game. A README file was in the archive, states that the threat actor used an exposed GitHub token to access the company's repositories for stealing the data. In a statement to Beeping Computer, the Times said the breach occurred in January after the credentials for a cloud-based third-party code platform were exposed. A subsequent email confirmed this code platform was GitHub. Quote, the underlying event related to yesterday's posting occurred in January of 2024 when a credential to a cloud-based third-party code platform was inadvertently made available. The issue was quickly identified, and we took appropriate measures to respond at the time. There is no indication of unauthorized access to Times' own systems nor impact to our operations related to the event. Our security measures include continuous monitoring for anomalous activity. So in other words, they accidentally posted the key, and they didn't rotate it. They knew they did it. They didn't change it. They just, oh, nobody caught that. And,
Internet sees all. Yeah. Once posted, never forgotten.
Yeah, Mel's doing, like, why does the New York Times have that much stuff? I bet they've actually got quite the development in-house for running websites. And I think they run several companies, so they're probably doing the website development for several
other
news.
They also probably do consulting for other news agencies on how to set stuff up, things like that. Because they've been around for forever.
So I guess the question now is, how long before the New York Times main page gets defaced and posts some ridiculous article?
Would you know?
This day and age? Fuck, I don't know.
Well, we can close out. We're there at the time.
We are there at the time. I do finally have the last article. I'll just let you summarize it. The anti-Ulz protesters hanging protected bat boxes on camera poles.
Yeah, that was great.
So what these guys are doing is they're hanging a bat box over the cameras on, you know, these anti...
the Ulz. Yeah, the low emission zones that charge you every day.
And...
Because, and the bat boxes are part of their environmental floors. Once they go up, they can't be touched.
Yeah, because the bats are endangered or something like that. So,
yeah.
How do I feel about Twitter likes being private? I don't fucking care.
If you care about Twitter, you're doing it wrong. So, in fact, get off Twitter. It's so not worth it.
The reason I say that is, yes, I heard about it. I just really don't. It's like, oh no, I can't see how many people agreed or liked, or I mean, what does a like even mean? Does that mean they agree with what you posted? Does it mean they just enjoyed what they posted? I mean, is somebody trolling you because they posted it on 4chan and you've got the We Are Retards crew coming through to I mean, it doesn't mean anything. So it's like, great, I can't base my opinions on the crowd. I have to think for myself. Oh no.
Whoever asked that question, lose your mobile phone for 2 days.
But anyways, the bats thing is a fun hack because it's like they can't take the bat box down because you're interfering with this endangered bat, but it's blocking their cameras.
I just thought it was amusing, that's all.
It's a good hack. It's a true hack of using the rules against themselves. I like it. So that's all I got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. Will there be one next Thursday? Probably. I've got some other stuff going on. So if we end up skipping next Thursday, don't be too surprised. But I am not expecting to skip it right now. So it's possible that we might miss next week. Anyways, we'll see. Anyways, peer decking every Thursday. Galaxy 15 radio site. The BBS in the IRC tonight. Al Hazard, Psychros, Mel Heliotrope, Marps. Oh, that's me. Sardonyx and She. Are you? Closing thoughts.
Yeah. Dude, put your fucking phone down. Get off Twitter. It's not worth it. It's definitely not worth it.
It is interesting. You know, if you are, you know, you get good at leaving your phone upstairs or just not. You know, putting it in your pocket and leaving it there, right? It is damned interesting looking around and seeing how many other people are just, they can't stop. It's like they have to have that phone in their hands and they have to be doing something.
Put it in another room. Like, if you are relying on it for a call, put it in another room and just monitor how anxious you fucking get and then realize you've got a problem.
It's amazing when you look around and see how many people are just absolutely addicted to these things.
Yep.
So
then you start thinking of all the things you could do because no one's fucking watching.
Well, there's certainly that.
But the only problem is there's someone always watching because there's a little black dome above you constantly.
You're just assuming somebody's bothering to watch that and not looking at their phone in the security office.
Well, yeah, there you go. Anyway, that's it for the show.
During this transitional zombie apocalypse, your satisfaction is very important.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm kind of retarded.
God hates Australia.
Oh, I need to clip the good night and good luck and put that in there as well.